It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the final Horticulture Day of 2020. We will be back every other week in January and then, of course, back to weekly shows in March. But this hour, we will send the year off in style with the holiday gift ideas for gardeners. And with me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Aaron Stile is here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron. Aaron, hello.
Hello.
Hi, we can hear you this time. It's all right.
Good morning.
We're working so hard to have a clearer sound quality on Talk of Iowa these days in pandemic radio style, and sometimes we forget where things are. So, Aaron, it is lovely to have you here today. And Cindy, you have gotten in touch with everybody in the horticulture department, and I think even beyond, to ask for ideas for gardeners. Tell me about your process.
Well, the process was I just emailed everyone, and everyone in horticulture, especially those people that have been on Hort Day on IPR, or the Hort Gang. And then I emailed other people like Aaron and Ed Lyons and Ryman Gardens. I also emailed Adam Janke, who's in NREM, who's kind of a wildlife expert. Of course, Donald Lewis, who's in entomology. So I just asked, and other people in plant pathology as well. So just looking for this kind of wide range of ideas for gifts for gardeners, because we're an unusual group, and we think about this a little differently than the typical home gardener. I thought we would come up with some great ideas and some, you know, some typical ideas as well as some more unusual ideas that you might want to see or think about in giving as gifts to your gardener that you know.
Well, and for gardeners, the winter holidays come at a really bad time. I mean, these are our major gift-giving holidays, and they come in the depths of winter when nothing is growing. Is that frustrating as a gardener, Cindy?
It is, but the downtime is usually appreciated. So the downtime allows us to reflect on what we worked out well last year and think about what we want to do better next year. So that, you know, having a little bit of that downtime is good. It's also a great time to think about, okay, I want to do this next year, so I'm going to need a new tool or so, you know, Christmas is okay. And it's just, it's like, you know, kids in a candy shop. It's just a lot of fun to have that, even if it is in our downtime.
Right.
I guess you could say. Yeah.
All right. Well, you start your gift giving guide. And I have tweeted out a link to it. And everybody who's interested should definitely take a look. But you started your gift giving guide with tools. And that's something that maybe people don't think of as a fun gift. But pretty much every person you talk to had a tool that they thought would make a wonderful gift.
Every single one mentioned at least one tool. And, you know, bypass pruners, a folding pruning saw, or soil knives are still incredibly popular. So many people on my gardening experts list definitely wanted or appreciated the tools that they got. Now, we're all picky on our tools. These were high-quality tools. They weren't the $5 trowel, the $5 plastic trowel. So this was, you know, the more expensive, I think it's called Hori Hori soil knife, or Felco pruners, hand pruners, or some kind of those kind of tools. I think Mark Vitosh mentioned a battery-powered chainsaw, so pretty expensive tool. But, you know, these tools were mentioned, some tools were mentioned by everyone. So while it doesn't seem that exciting to maybe give a gardener a tool, I think it's one of those really appreciated gifts. So it may not seem so exciting for the giver, but the receiver is like, oh, I always will think about you because you gave me this battery-powered chainsaw.
Every time I'm doing this difficult chore, I will remember that you are making it easier for me, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right. Aaron, any other tools that didn't come up there that you want to make sure we think about?
Well, there are a few tools that are actually not necessarily gardening tools, but are really useful to gardeners and might be be really welcomed. There's two in particular I'm thinking of. One is a battery-powered reciprocating saw, like a Sawzall, especially for somebody who has some maybe limited like arthritis or something like that, because they can be really great for like dividing root balls, some kind of rough pruning or clearing. That kind of stuff is always nicely welcome. And when it's battery powered, then you don't have to worry about the cord, which is nice
In
well, the
garden. And those rechargeable battery packs have gotten so much better.
Oh, yes.
I know that many different tool brands have, you know, the same battery for many different tools. And if you buy into a system, it's really going to work for you. And I remember when these things first came out and how they were exciting but terrible, you know. And now they're really great.
Better. Yes.
Your person, your recipient has bought into,
true.
Though.
Right.
It's true. And then they can use the batteries. Yeah, that's a very good point, too. The other tool that I like that isn't necessarily a gardening tool, but is really useful to a gardener is a spring-loaded needle-nose pliers. They are great for pulling woody, like tree seedlings and those kinds of things. The spring loaded part, usually you can find them in the electrical section, makes it really nice to use over and over again. And they grab on and they pull them right out by the roots nicely. So that's kind of a fun, it's not something you would necessarily think would be a great gift, but once you start using it, especially if you have somebody that lives kind of in an area where they might get a lot of like weeds that are like little tree seedlings and things like that, it's awesome.
Well, and small enough to fit in a stocking too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Good idea.
All right. And I see on your gift guide, Cindy, that Adam Toms, who of course comes on, Adam Toms, who comes on the show to talk about turf grass, always asks for a robotic mower.
Right, which is great. For you think about the turf expert who's asking for a robotic mower. So he must think that they do at least a decent job for him to maintain his home lawn. But, you know, this is also a really expensive gift. And they haven't actually, you know, done it yet or purchased it yet. Because I think I think Adam's wife is like, I'm not so sure about this. And, you know, they have to think about the amount of toys and animals that are on their lawn
right,
as well.
Right, so, right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, those can be very big investments. Although the fact that he wants one makes me want one.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I was like, okay, I want to try this out now. It's a big investment. So.
All right. Yep. Well, let's talk about plants, because even though it's not the growing season, of course, plants are still something that gardeners love to receive. What are some of your favorite gift ideas that are living this time of year, Cindy?
Right. So any kind of house plant. So often those are very popular. I know that Aaron might mention orchids that are coming up. Amaryllis is usually pretty easy to find right now and is a great winter blooming indoor bulb that makes for a great houseplant. Christmas cactus or holiday cactus is another one that's a great long-lived houseplant. So these are great, as well as poinsettias. All of these are usually very appreciated by most gardeners. Those are just a few of the plants that I can think of that are readily available. There'll be other plants that are starting to become available as well, like cyclamen and maybe even African violets or gloxinias. We sometimes see those in the winter too, that kind of have that kind of Christmas holiday flair. And they all make pretty good long-lived houseplants as well, except for maybe the poinsettia.
And Aaron, we are going to be talking about orchids coming up in January, and they're so beautiful. They do make a really wonderful gift. Do you need to make sure that the person you're giving them to is prepared to care for them, or is this something where it's okay if it doesn't last?
It is probably okay if it doesn't last, especially moth orchids. They last, they're in bloom for such a long time that even if you don't want to get it to rebloom, or even if you're like, you know, this isn't really a part of my shtick right now, you can at least enjoy it easily for 3, maybe even 4 months, depending on how happy it is and how long it's been in the store and all those things. So in that sense, it's still a really very thoughtful and long-lived temporary plant. So I think orchids are always a nice one. The only hard part, of course, is getting it to and fro without it getting too cold.
Mm-hmm. Right. Any advice on that?
Just making sure that you cover it and go to a warm car and don't think that dashing will be okay, right? So, well, I'll just go real quick. It doesn't make any difference. You need to make sure that you cover it, even if it is a very short distance.
Okay. Right. No cheating.
Even though dashing is in the holiday spirit, dashing to and fro.
Well, we're going to continue to talk about gifts for gardeners through the hour. And of course, you are welcome to share your best gift you've ever received if you're a gardener, or maybe the best one you've given to the gardener in your life, along with your questions about the plants and trees in your life at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. But we should mention for sure that a great small gift is the 2021 garden calendar, right, Cindy? We can't leave that out.
Yes, cannot leave that out. Iowa State University Extension has several different publications available, and the 2021 garden calendar is very focused on Iowa and Iowa natives. So you can have wonderful gardening pictures of native plants in your house throughout 2021 for the small cost of, like, I think it's $7. So pretty inexpensive. Roll it up, stick it in a stocking, or wrap it up. It's a great gift. And I think most gardeners would appreciate it because it gives you tips throughout the year and what to do. It's also, I like it, because the spaces are big enough to kind of write things down, so you can write down when you planted things. So it makes a great garden journal as well.
All right. And this is Richard Giron's final garden calendar. So yes, also a nice nod to Richard there. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Cindy Haynes is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Erin Stile is also here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions or your gift ideas. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is our final Horticulture Day of 2020. Of course, we will be back in January every other week through the winter and then weekly in March. In this hour, we've been talking about gift ideas for gardeners. You're welcome to join the conversation with your suggestions. Maybe tell us about the best gift you've ever received as a gardener. You can also tell us about gifts you've given. And of course, ask your questions about plants, trees, whatever. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I have tweeted out a link to the Gifts for Gardeners guide that Cindy put together. Cindy Haynes is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And we do have Richard on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good, and you've got some gift ideas for us?
Well, I do. I've got indoor ones and outdoor ones. As was mentioned, the Christmas cactus, because it's so cute and delicate with those little tiny flowers, and violets with their little tiny flowers. The outdoor gifts would be, it's like a one-inch foam padded knee mat, so you can kneel down to the ground and, you know, so you don't have, like, bend over from the waist. And also, just like a low, flat, squatting stool, so you can sit down and do, you know, gardening sitting, but low to the ground.
Oh, those are great ideas, Richard.
Very
Thank
good.
You so much. Are you on the receiving end of gardening gifts or on the giving end?
Both. I welcome them and I give. And I get inspiration from everything, especially your broadcast.
Oh, thank you so much. And happy holidays, Richard.
You too. Love you all. Thank you.
I love those ideas for the knee pad mat or the low squatting stool, because those are things that you might think, oh, I can get on. You know, I can get by without that. I'm not going to buy that for myself.
Oh, and it's so wonderful when you have it, because then you think, oh, I'm never letting anyone else borrow this. Or when your son takes it, then you get really mad because you look for those knee pads or those that, you know, that's, we have a really low stool that's got like a tractor seat, and it's garden tires, and it rolls, and it's for the edges around the beds and for weeding. It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. But when Jackson takes it sledding down the hill.
Oh, now he gets called out by name on the air. Yeah. That's nice.
it becomes a part of an issue because those things become a really part of your, this is how much easier it makes it. So you don't appreciate it until it's not there.
All right. Did you want to complain about your kids, Aaron, at all?
No. But I will say that the knee pad is fabulous too, because one of the pieces of equipment we make available to all of our volunteers at Ryman Gardens is a knee pad, and they're used quite frequently. So it's almost become as useful as in gardening for our volunteers as a trowel or a pruners.
Absolutely.
Nice.
And becomes more and more essential with each passing year for all of us, I think. Let's go back to the phones. Faith is on the line in Elkader. Hi, Faith.
Hello.
Hi. You've got some gift ideas, too?
Yes. I was going to suggest that maybe it would be nice to put together a basket of kind of luxury, spoil you when you can't be out gardening types of things. And something you might put in the basket would be herb tea, herb bath balls if they happen to have a bathtub, or herbal lotions, a pot of fresh herbs. There are some wonderful balsamic and olive oils that are infused with herbs. And I have a seasoning in my kitchen I use for everything, roasting vegetables, chicken, fish, everything. It's called Herbes de Provence. And it's just a wonderful thing to have on your kitchen shelf.
Well, those are great suggestions. Faith, when you give suggestions like that, are those the kinds of things you're hoping to receive yourself? Just in case. Okay, I was going to say, just in case someone you know is listening and wants to make a note.
I'm glad you said that.
Oh, Faith, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have a message from Nick. He says, the best gift I gave my wife for the garden was when I built her a garden bench outside near the garden. That's really a wonderful idea, too, Cindy.
That's a fantastic idea. And if you are a woodworker or you like those kinds of crafts and building, there's lots of things that you can give to other gardeners. And maybe it's just a pile of wood to say, hey, I'm going to build you a bird box or a garden bench or a bat house, whatever that it might be. It sounds like a lot of fun. And those are fantastic gifts that last a long time. So great ideas.
Well, and if you happen to have yourself a chainsaw, which I know many, many were purchased here this year, I have seen some really cool benches created post-derecho with some chainsaw work and a really big log. So if you still have giant logs sitting around, maybe it's time to get crafty with those. You can call with your questions. You can call with your suggestions. Roger is on the line in Duncombe with a question for us. Hi, Roger.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have inherited a Scheffalera plant that I've had since 1994 when my father passed away, and it has now gotten to be about 8.5 feet tall. I'd like to propagate it, put it into smaller pieces, and distribute it out to my relatives.
Aaron, do you want to take that on?
Yeah, Scheffalera is a pretty good candidate for air layering. So this is kind of an interesting way of propagating. Essentially, what you're going to do is somewhere on the stem, you're going to kind of damage the stem. You're going to kind of cut partway through the stem. And then you're going to pack some sphagnum moss, some moist sphagnum moss around that. And then I think for most homeowners, the easiest thing to use is tin foil, but you can also use a plastic bag to kind of hold it in place and then wait for roots to grow. And once those roots form, you can cut the top off, pot it up, and you have a shorter plant, which is usually welcomed, and a propagule.
Should I try to go for like a 8-inch or 10-inch length of the plant where I make the cut?
It may be dictated some by where you want the plant to end up in terms of height. Usually about for Chef Lair, I mean, that's a pretty big, it can be a pretty big plant. And so at least 8 or 10 inches would be fine. Then you'll have a nice sized cutting when you're finished.
Well, I thank you very much. You have a great day now.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Roger. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions about plants and trees in your life or your suggestions of other gift ideas for gardeners. 866-780-9100. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Susan. She says, I have an idea that most people wouldn't think of, and it's super practical, if not beautiful. I couldn't get through the season without this. The Garden Glide looks like a snow saucer with a rope, and it's the best tool for one person to be able to move bags of gravel, heavy pots, rocks, firewood, etc., all by themselves because it's low to the ground. You don't have to lift heavy things high enough to put in a wheelbarrow. It slides easily over turf, gravel, or concrete and stores flat against the shed wall. And she says, no, I'm not representing the company or anything. I just find that as I get older, tools like this are so valuable.
I would agree. And several of our garden experts mentioned tugs or other types of low carts to kind of move things around the garden. I haven't heard of the Garden Glide, though, so I'm going to go check that one out. It's a great idea.
All right. Well, and I know, and one of the suggestions on your list are to think about the young people in your lives mm-hmm. and think about children's books about gardens.
Yeah, there are so many wonderful children's books out there. They're usually very nicely illustrated. Some of them are really informative. So even as a gardener, as an adult, I learn things from them. And it's a great way to share gardening with a grandchild or a child or to even think about gardening during the winter. And then it's something that lasts, you know, for years to come. So a lot of fun kind of children's books out there. And they're kind of random. You'll see some, you know, at Walmart or Target, and then you'll see some at independent bookstores, and you can find hundreds online.
Well, and I find that also we talked already about houseplants, but giving a child mm-hmm. their own houseplant can be a really exciting thing to do.
That can be so much fun, and it teaches so many valuable lessons on how to nurture and care for things and being responsible and, you know, and if it's not horrible if the plant dies, because then you can, oh, let's go pick out another one and let's try again.
Right. Well, and my kids get a huge kick out of amaryllis bulbs. We've been doing those every year for forever because they're just so rewarding because they
right.
grow so fast and then the blooms are so dramatic. Erin, do you have any other thoughts about gifts for maybe budding gardeners or children you hope might be budding gardeners someday?
I think finding some of the things that, you know, like potting kits and things like that, that kind of allow you the opportunity to do something together. It kind of, because that's one of the fun things I find with my kids and gardening is creating opportunities for us to just spend time together outside or inside. You know, having like an herb kit that we can put together, as a team and, grow out on the windowsill. And then you can take it one step further with something like herbs and actually make something with it that they'll probably eat, which is also very exciting.
Right. Mm-hmm. If they are involved in making it, they might just put it in their mouths, even if it's a grain.
Right.
Yes.
866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions about the plants or trees in your life. I know a lot of people still have trees that are ailing post derecho, and as everything has fallen off the trees and the snow has fallen, it's interesting to look around the landscape at how very different it looks in eastern Iowa, but I know all around Iowa as well. So if you have questions, give us a call, 866-780-9100, email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's another gift idea from Jana in Omaha. She says, my favorites are number one, fiberglass garden cart about 30 by 36, 6 inches deep with 6-inch clearance. It doesn't tip over, has a 250-pound limit, used for wheelbarrow tasks, and doesn't rust. Solid tires, no flats.
15 years old and good as new. That's a good one. She also says, yeah. Fisker's tools, especially loppers and pruners designed for arthritic hands. And, of course, gift cards for the garden center. She says, I enjoy perusing catalogs for the rest of the winter to decide what to buy. And Erin, that, of course, that's something that so many gardeners enjoy doing this time of year, is spending a lot of time with their garden catalog. So I can imagine that while a gift certificate may seem like a, I don't know, maybe an anticlimactic gift to some, it also gives you a lot of freedom to pick out a lot of different things, right?
It does. It absolutely does. And especially if you can do it from a thoughtful supplier. So there are a lot of, in particular, online sources of some really unusual things. And they may not necessarily go to those sources or even consider them without the gift certificate. So that makes it more fun.
We have a question from Marlene. She says, my holiday cactus is several years old. It blooms very well, but the last couple of years, it's been developing several branches that look wilted. There are healthy looking blooms on the wilted branches. Should I cut those wilted branches off? The rest of the plant looks healthy. Cindy, what do you think?
I don't think I would cut the wilted branches off just yet. I would check the soil to see if it's staying too wet or too dry. This kind of makes me think that, you know, Christmas cactus isn't a true cactus. It doesn't like to be totally dried out in between waterings, especially now that it's flowering. And if you are to cut off those branches, then you're losing those blooms that are forming. If there's any inconsistency in watering, it'll wilt, and then the blooms are usually some of the first things to go, and then you can kind of tidy it up as needed, but check for moisture level. It may need more water, or it may be it's getting a little too wet. It needs to dry out a little bit more, and then just let the plant decide what it's going to drop off on its own. And sometimes, you know, holiday cactus, even ones that are well established, will drop off a few branches for any number of reasons, and they'll still be okay. So it's not the end of the world, at least not yet.
You know, a lot of us, of course, buy the little tiny holiday cactus this time of year in a small pot, but they can grow to be enormous, and they can live for so long. I mean, they can live for decades and decades, right?
They can. They can live for generations. So this is one that, you know, I have seen them in whiskey barrels, half whiskey barrels, and they've consumed the entire thing. They like to be pot bound. They like that kind of indoor home environment. It's just made for them, and they can last for generations. So it is one well worth the effort because it is a very long lived and highly respected and enjoyed and appreciated houseplant. So worth the effort.
If you want to share part of a Christmas cactus or a holiday cactus that has been in the family for a long time, are they easy to propagate?
They're pretty easy to propagate. So those branches or those phyllocads, the little pieces of the leaves or branches, you can pop off like a 2 or 3 section piece, put it into perlite or sand, and kind of keep it moist, and I usually tent it with a Ziploc bag on top to kind of keep it nice and moist. And you're taking stem cuttings in a sense, and these stem cuttings will take maybe a couple of months to root, especially if they're kept kind of moist and warm and humid. But then you have a little plant that is a cutting that's identical to the plant that you propagated it from. So you might have grandmother's holiday cactus, and then that's a great gift idea. Say, hey, I'm propagating this for you so that in March I'm going to give you a little piece of this holiday cactus that's 50 years old.
And if you are listening right now and you haven't done anything with your holiday cactus and it's not blooming, is there still time to try to coax it into bloom this winter?
It could still coax into bloom this winter. There are 3 different types of cactus that are called holiday cactus. So there's the Thanksgiving cactus that is probably bloomed or blooming now. There's a Christmas cactus that may bloom sometime around Christmas, which could include, you know, early January. And then there's an Easter cactus, which will bloom sometime usually in March. So any number of those could could bloom at any time, and sometimes they even bloom a couple of times. So keep it in bright light, cooler night temperatures. They are photoperiodic, so they like the short days and the long nights. If you can do that, that helps get it into bloom as well. But otherwise, just wait. It'll happen. It almost always does.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Erin Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We've been talking about gifts for gardeners, and of course, Cindy and Erin will also answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, our final Horticulture Day of 2020. We will be back in January every other week, and we'll continue on that schedule through the beginning of March, and then we'll be back to weekly shows, and pretty soon after that, things will actually start growing again. Erin Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is here. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We've been talking about gifts for gardeners, but you're also welcome to join the conversation with any of your questions about the plants or trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. From Mark in Marion, he says, let's not forget our wildlife. Consider bird houses and bird feeders. Those are great ideas. Andrew says, my gift to everyone is the knowledge that radish bears fruit. Radishes bear fruit. Let them bolt and pickle the pods. They taste like radish and have the texture of a snap pea. Erin, have you ever tried one of those?
I have not tried one of those. It takes a while for some varieties of radish to bolt, but certainly if you let it happen, it would be really a fun project.
Cindy, have you ever given that a try?
I have. There's an heirloom radish called rat tail radish that produces...
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, doesn't it? But it produces a pod that looks a little bit like a tail and has some seeds. And yeah, you can kind of saute them and they taste like the spicy radish. It's just kind of crazy. It's wild. And it's, I would say, kind of pretty. It's okay. But you do have to let them bolt. That means you can't harvest the radish. So you do have to let them bolt and kind of produce the seed. And many gardeners are, also harvesting that radish and not usually getting that to that next step.
Yeah. This is a question from Karen. I heard someplace that there are special plants that can be used for a water retention garden or a kind of pop-up wetland on moist sections of your property. Does Iowa State Extension have any publications on how to install one of those and or the plants we should be using in them? And can you name a few of those plants? Erin, does that sound like something you want to tackle?
Well, I do know. I mean, this is essentially a rain garden.
Yeah.
Right.
And so there are quite a bit of resources available both from Iowa State Extension and from other places about rain gardens. And you're going to be looking for some basically water tolerant plants. And I think the only thing that I struggle with rain gardens sometimes is that many of the plants can get kind of big. And so if you don't have a space that you want really big plants in, sometimes it's a little hard to find, but things like Joe Pye weed or some of the hibiscus, button bush, which is a shrub that would work really well in there, they all like wet feet. And the only thing I can think of right offhand that loves wet feet that's a little shorter are a lot of the sedges, which are kind of grass-like plants that would appreciate a condition like that.
Cindy, you have anything to add?
Yeah, you can get some nice, there's a lot of perennials that will tolerate this, like cardinal flower as well. Even some daylilies are sometimes planted along the side, or swamp milkweed. But it's like Erin says, some of these plants get fairly large. And in the middle of a lawn and a kind of a bioswale or a low area, it looks a little different. So sometimes you have to be prepared for that. But they're very effective, and there's a lot of great resources. Just type in rain gardens or bioswales, and you will find something from Iowa
as well as from Iowa State Extension.
Do you, I mean, given that we're in Iowa, you want to be careful to use native plants in something like that, would you say?
There are some natives that work really well there. There's also some non-natives that work pretty well, too, that don't have the tendency to reseed and aren't as big as of an invasive issue that like purple loosestrife
right,
would be.
So immediately sprang to my mind. Yeah. I don't want to see wetlands full of purple loosestrife.
Right.
I've seen enough of that.
Right. So there are some others that tend to be a little bit tidier there. And most of these publications will give you a list of plants, including some or many that are native.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Brian is on the line in Robbins. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I got my wife a small lemon tree 2 years ago, and she sets it outside during the summer when it's warm and it grows and looks really wonderful. And we bring it in and all the leaves fall off when we bring it in and have it under grow light. Is there something we should be doing with this?
Aaron?
This is a pretty common thing for a lot of different plants that kind of do summer vacation outside and then come back in for the winter. The plant's just adjusting. Even though you have grow lights, the amount of light that it's getting indoors is definitely different and probably lower than it would be outside. And citrus, there are other plants that do this too. Hibiscus is really notorious for this too. When you bring them in, they drop a lot of those leaves, and it's kind of a response to the change in conditions, primarily light, but also things like humidity and temperature and things like that too. So there's not a lot you can do about it. Continue to provide as much light as you can and try to make sure that it doesn't have other stressors. Citrus is also notorious for bringing in little friends like scale, and that can add another level of stress to the plant. And so being diligent about scouting and dealing with those pests before they come big issues will help a lot. A lot of times they just regrow the leaves, and when you put them back outside, they'll drop some of those leaves and regrow new ones. And it's just kind of the cycle that the plant ends up in because we have to bring it in over the winter months.
Is there a different type of grow light we might be using? You know, or maybe we're not putting enough light on it?
Potentially. Usually the best lights, you're going to be looking for stuff that's relatively intense in terms of the quantity of light that it puts out. And the other thing to keep in mind is that the distance makes a difference. So especially if you're using fluorescent, as you get further and further away from the plant, the light intensity goes way down. And it's not something that our eyes see very well, but it's definitely something the plant can tell. So getting that light source relatively close to the plant, not so close that it might, you know, cause problems with temperature if the fixture gets kind of warm, but within 6 or 12 inches is a good distance, especially for a plant like citrus that really appreciates high light.
So would you suggest the fluorescence versus an incandescent?
I would definitely use fluorescent over incandescent. They tend to be better. They produce a little bit more light, and they tend to be better energy-wise. There are a lot of LED fixtures available now that are even better energy-wise, and in many cases can put out a lot more light than fluorescent even. Just look for something that has kind of a full spectrum. A lot of times they're sold as like daylight, quote unquote. They have a bit wider spectrum of wavelength, the color and the wavelength that can help. And try to find some of the brightest ones that you can. Get them within about a foot of the plant and see how it all goes. I have converted all of my indoor lights over to LED and had really good success with them because they are brighter. Fluorescent also loses intensity with age, and LED does not do that to the same level. So they're all options. LED is probably one of our better ones now. And thankfully, the cost is very comparable to fluorescent.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Brian. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. And if you are on Twitter, you should be following Iowa Master Gardener. They are live tweeting today's show and sending out so much incredibly useful information all along the way. So just a shout out to them. And again, you can also email us your questions, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John says, I received the best gardener gift ever last year, a battery-powered leaf blower. I use it year-round, blowing leaves in the fall, blowing light snow off of vehicles and even the drive and sidewalks only when it's really cold, lawn trimmings off of sidewalks, blowing dust leaves out of the garage, clearing off the roof. It proved to be handy this summer and fall after the derecho as leaves kept coming off of injured trees. I even bought an extra battery for extended use so one charges while the other is in use. Thank you for that suggestion, John. Clearly a very useful tool. And here's a question from Mike. He says, I am overwintering some pepper plants, but I'm plagued with aphids on one of them. I've tried an organic insecticide and scraping them off the leaves, but they keep coming back. What else should I try? Cindy?
So you can do a couple of different things. So an insecticide is good. Pepper plants, some peppers have really small leaves, some of them have fairly large leaves. I might just try a soapy water solution. So, you know, in a little sprayer, just mix a little bit of Dawn dishwashing soap or Palmolive, something like that, and water. Kind of soap up a spray on the top side of the leaves and the undersides of the leaves, and then just rinse it off. So you might do this in a shower or someplace where you can get the whole thing wet. If you do this once every couple of weeks, then maybe you're going to disrupt a generational cycle of aphids so that you're going to eliminate a generation and then the population goes down. So I think that's something I would start off with, especially since it's a plant indoors. And then you have to move to more of the insecticides. And usually with aphids, because they're so good at kind of starting the next generation, is you might have to do this once or twice or even three times before you get good enough control that you can manage it until you can get that pepper plant back outside and then have some other things more beneficials take care of it for you, as well as maybe use some of those insecticides again. So whitefly, aphids, scale, some of these insects, they really do kind of, their populations do increase when they come indoors and usually requires us to move to a couple of different types of products to just try and manage or control them, reduce the numbers until we can take them outside.
All right, let's go to the phones. Megan is on the line at 866-780-9100 in Fort Dodge. Hi, Megan.
Hello. Sorry. It's really windy outside.
Oh, that's all right. What's your question?
I'm calling about my money tree. I got it a couple of years ago, and I have it inside. I don't ever take it outside. Sorry, I just ran. Anyway, it was braided when I got it. And I kind of thought that probably wasn't good for it, so I ended up unbraiding it. And since then, it's just not been very happy. And so I guess I'm looking for tips on, like, how does the money tree grow best? Like, does it want little water or a lot of water? Like, I don't know, more heat, less heat? I just need some tips to kind of help it come back.
Aaron?
Well, I think I know what you're, there are a couple of different plants that are referred to as money tree, but the ones that are often sold as braided plants are actually in the same family as things like hibiscus, and they like to be a little bit on the wet side. And so this was a plant that would be okay if it's a little bit on the wet side. That plant, when it was braided together, so there's several kind of stems that were just kind of trained and braided together. When you took it apart, probably had a little bit of or a lot of stress, and it's probably responding to that. As long as you can, you want to provide bright indirect light for it. I wouldn't be fertilizing it real heavily or really much at all this moment, but as soon, you know, around March or so, start fertilizing it every other time that you water with a half strength fertilizer can be beneficial. And then just trying to give it as consistent watering and light as you can to help it kind of recover from the stress that it went through being braided. It's okay that it's braided. Eventually those stems kind of grow together. And so it's not necessarily a huge problem. It would probably be happier not braided, but certainly
but it
undoing
cool
it.
In the store.
It does look really cool in the store. That's true. But undoing that probably did, you know, break some things or kind of maybe even some roots underneath, depending on how much was moved around. And it's just trying to recover from that. So good, consistent care, bright indirect light. It's okay to keep this one a little on the wet side. It doesn't mind being a little bit wet kind of wait and see.
All right. Megan, thank you so much for your call. This one's from Chris in Coralville. I have a approximately 25-year-old burning bush that's about 9 feet tall. I assume he put 9 inches tall, but I'm guessing it's got to be 9 feet tall, right? Mm-hmm. Over the last couple of years, about half of the branches appear leafless or dead, mostly on the inside. My neighbor said I can prune it back to 2 or 3 feet. Is that a plan or something else? Cindy?
Yeah, you can prune this one back by quite a bit because it's real amenable to that. I don't know that I would take it down to 2 or 3 feet, but I would say, you know, you can prune this one back by half. So if you want to take it down to 5 feet this year, maybe you even want to think about doing a little bit of thinning, taking out some of the, you know, the oldest stems if they have a lot. It's a good way to kind of rejuvenate it and make it a little bit fuller. This is a shrub that is going to be hard to maintain at 2 or 3 feet, so do keep that in mind. It's a whole lot easier to maintain it at about 5 feet or 10 feet because they can get 10 or 15 feet tall than it is by constantly pruning it and keeping it at 2 to 3 feet. So it might not be the right shrub for you if you have to maintain it at 2 to 3 feet. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. All right. Well, Chris, good luck with that. And we are out of time this hour. We didn't mention that, of course, hopefully we'll be back to normal in just a few months and we'll be able to go places safely again. But memberships in gardens and memberships in arboretums and all kinds of things, those make great gifts as well. Right, Cindy?
Those are fantastic, and they give all year.
All right. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Erin Stile, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Happy holidays to both of you, and we'll be back again in January. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Rick Brewer, Matt Alvarez, and Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can get in touch with us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And please subscribe to our podcast. I'm Charity Nebbe.